Welcome to Game Week, and welcome to the Roughing the Kicker Chiefs podcast on Blog Talk Radio and on ArrowheadAddict.com. I'm your host, Joshua Briscoe, and we have finally made it. The dark days have come and gone through this offseason, and together we have come to the place we've been waiting for months now. The NFL draft was a nice distraction. Training camp was fun to pay attention to, but now we are closing in on the first game of the regular season of a season that I hope lasts something like 20 weeks for this Kansas City Chiefs team. On today's show, we're not going to preview the Chiefs-Chargers game yet because we're about to hit the two-show-a-week mark, so I'll be saving that show for a couple of days from now. Make sure you're subscribed to the show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts, because this is not the last you'll hear from me before this Chiefs game comes up. So what are we doing today? We are going to be breaking down all of the interesting moves the Kansas City Chiefs made on their way to a 53-man roster, which is currently still one-man heavy. All that and much more in this episode of RTK. Before we get to the minutiae of the Chiefs roster, I do want to talk about the bit of news that came out of Andy Reid's mouth a few days back. It sounds like Jamaal Charles was pretty unlikely to play week one, and I would say at this point I would put all of my chips on Charles being out the first week of this season. And that's something that I think we've actually, and we, including myself, we've actually underrated the possibility of up until this point. The Chiefs don't like to play guys that haven't been practicing. I mean, Tom Bahali is a special case where he practices some and then gets Fridays off or whatever, and then shows up on game day. But the fact that Charles really hasn't been in any way involved with the preseason games, hasn't been active at all at any point, this shouldn't come as a surprise. But I think we kind of underrated the idea that it could be happening with Jamaal Charles not playing in week one, so he could be out for a little while. I think my first reaction, at least, and I think probably your first reaction as well, the Chiefs are in a pretty good place because they have two really, really strong backup running backs in Spencer Ware and Charkendrick West, and I would have contended Darren Reeves is a heck of a three. The Chiefs have so far kept Nile Davis on the roster, though, which I will talk about in just a little bit. But the thing that I'm concerned about that no one else is talking about at all is Charkendrick West, who, if memory serves, we haven't seen him since the first preseason game. I have no idea what the extent of his injury is. No one really does, but he keeps not showing up in games. I think Spencer Ware is going to be the guy, like if you're in a fantasy league and you're playing through these Chiefs running backs, if you have Jamaal Charles, I would try to keep a hold of Spencer Ware because he's going to be useful anyway. He's going to get all of the red zone carries. Not all of them, but you know, enough to make him relevant. But I've always kind of envisioned Charkendrick West, as we saw last year, as the guy who tries to do the Jamaal Charles things, while Spencer Ware is a totally different type of running back. Because I'm concerned about the health of Charkendrick West, Spencer Ware might just be the guy for a couple of weeks here. I hope Charles comes back sooner rather than later, but this is going to sound purely heretical, but if Charles was out again for a little while, but the other two guys were healthy, I wouldn't be all that concerned. I would rather have Charles back than West. I don't think that's going on any sort of limb, but I'm perfectly comfortable with a West and Ware backfield. However, if that ends up being a Spencer Ware, Nile Davis backfield, my stomach starts to turn a little bit. So that's something to keep an eye on there. I would assume that we'll see Jamaal Charles back by, say, week four at the latest, because if it was going to be a six-week injury, they would do what they did with Justin Houston and put him on the PUP list, and he would miss five games and plus the bye week. So, in fact, the Chiefs' bye week, if memory serves, would actually be a really great place for Charles to come back, because the schedule goes Chargers week one, at Texans week two, Jets week three, Steelers week four, and then week five is the bye week, and then week six is the Raiders game. If they really wanted to be looking at that week five after the bye week as a return time for Jamaal Charles, that would make a lot of sense if they think he needs that much time. But we haven't gotten enough updates on Charles to really have a good feel for where he could be. Andy Reid saying, it looks like it'll be a stretch for him to play week one, does not mean to me on any level, and it shouldn't mean this to you either, that he's a stretch to play week one, but he'll be there week two, or he'll be there week three. Andy Reid is simply saying he is not going to play week one. Everything beyond that, in my mind, is a total mystery. Let's talk about then to the roster in the same area, although not exactly for D'Anthony Thomas, I suppose, but Nile Davis and D'Anthony Thomas, the two surprises of this roster cut down to me. both made the team for now. The Chiefs are currently at 50. As I record this show, it's about 10 a.m. on September 7th. The Chiefs have 54 men on the roster because they have a roster exemption for Eric Berry. Whenever Eric Berry is fully activated and brought back, then they will have to cut someone else. I don't expect it to be Niall Davis or DeAnthony Thomas. Certainly not DeAnthony Thomas. Later on, I'll talk about the importance of DeAnthony Thomas. A really interesting article that Adam Teicher wrote about how much better the Chiefs' offense has been with DeAnthony Thomas on the field versus with him off the field. And even then, I'll talk about a little bit of the highs and lows of the preseason game a little bit later on here in this show. And the highs of that game do include DeAnthony Thomas. So if you want to hear more about him, hold on, we'll get there. Niall Davis, on the other hand, this confused me. The Chiefs ended up cutting Darren Reeves, and they got him to the practice squad, which is a positive. At this point, the Chiefs still employ five very talented running backs. I still don't see the scheme fit for Niall Davis here, and I'm wondering if this is kind of if the Chiefs are playing chicken a little bit with the rest of the NFL and saying, oh, listen, man, if you guys don't want Niall Davis, then we'll just go ahead and keep him and use him. And maybe they're trying to move him for a draft pick before they end up having to cut him when Eric Berry returns or whenever Charles gets healthy or whatever. I could also see it simply being they would rather have Niall Davis be around to fill in for the Jamaal Charles role until Charles gets back. If Charles gets healthy and returns and they cut Niall Davis and don't even add him to the practice squad, that wouldn't surprise me at all. But in the meantime, having more faith in Davis than Reeves for while Charles is out, I think that's probably the logic here. I still would love to see them be able to trade Niall Davis for something because I do think he's a talented running back. I think for most teams, the majority of teams in the NFL, Niall Davis could be the third running back and a kick return specialist. But the Chiefs have, with Tyreek Hill and DeAnthony Thomas, they have plenty of guys who can return kicks. And obviously, Niall Davis doesn't return punts. Those two guys return punts. But even for kickoffs, I would have Hill or DeAnthony Thomas bring about the kickoffs as well. They simply have a speed that Niall Davis does not have. But for one of those reasons, or for some combination of those reasons, the Chiefs thought fit to keep Niall Davis on this roster. So that's what we're working with right now. I wouldn't be surprised to see that change very soon. The Chiefs made two trades. One of them makes enough sense, I suppose. The other one truly confuses me. So the Chiefs traded fourth-year veteran cornerback Marcus Cooper to the Arizona Cardinals for a 2018 conditional seventh-round pick. Virtually nothing. I mean, a conditional 2018 seventh-round pick. Each of those words, the word conditional, seventh round, and 2018 are all nice red flags for saying this is a virtually useless trade that we've made. There are three elements of those in that trade. Let's see if the Chiefs can up the ante for how they got rid of Rod Streeter. The Chiefs and 49ers swapped conditional 7th round 2019 picks in a trade for Rod Streeter. That's at least 4 or 5 degrees of the most inconsequential trade you could possibly make. If somehow the Niners are better than the Chiefs in 2018, then the Chiefs would have actually moved back in the 7th round to get rid of Rod Streeter. I'm slightly annoyed by this. Let's go ahead and do Marcus Cooper first. The trade to give up Marcus Cooper is virtually the same thing that the Chiefs gave up to get Kevin Acker. So they basically just traded in a 3-team deal, basically just traded Marcus Cooper to the Cardinals for a 7th round pick, and traded a 7th round pick to the Niners to get Kevin Acker. That's simple enough. I would prefer probably to have the guy who's been in the system, and the most experienced corner on this team was Marcus Cooper, which is amazing. A 4th-year veteran is the guy who's the most experienced on this team in the cornerback position. Not the whole secondary, but the cornerback position. I'm not super thrilled trading that up as a kind of change of scenery thing for Kevin Acker, who started some games last year for the Niners, but didn't look particularly good in the preseason game. I'll touch on that in a second too. But but it's fine. It's whatever. It's an inconsequential fine trade. I think I would have rather have held on to Marcus Cooper because he's a part of this team and he knows the scheme and everything. Which, as we'll talk about with Kavari Russell in a little while, knowing the scheme of the defense might be more complicated than we thought. There's a tease for you. Stick around in the show. But the trade of Rod Streeter swapping conditional 7th round picks in 2019, which is just skipping the waiver wire process. In fact, I have a gut feeling that I haven't been able to actually verify yet, so take this with a grain of salt, some total speculation. That maybe the Chiefs avoided having to pay Rod Streeter had having to pay part of Rod Streeter's salary, perhaps, by trading him instead of cutting him and have him picked up. So maybe this was a little bit of a sneaky, not even sneaky, but just trading Rod Streeter sets the Chiefs free of his contract completely, as opposed to keeping them on the hook for some of it. Perhaps. That's a total guess. I don't know this for sure. But otherwise, I don't. This move is, like, again, virtually completely useless. And I was surprised by it. I'm down on Albert Wilson this year. If you've listened to the show through the offseason, you know that I'm sick and tired of Albert Wilson running jet sweeps. I'm sick and tired of watching Albert Wilson go down the field and not be fast enough and then alligator arm a pass where he just will not make the effort to actually go get it. And frankly, I'm more okay with him doing anything from the slot, but even out of the slot, he's struggled more often than not last season. And I don't really see why he would bounce back from any of that. He didn't look any better than that in the preseason this year. So I'm down on Albert Wilson. But he's a slot guy, whatever, I get it. Well, two other guys who are essentially here to play the slot and also be able to stretch the field with their speed are D'Anthony Thomas and Tyreek Hill. Keeping D'Anthony Thomas, Tyreek Hill, and Albert Wilson seems redundant to me. Much more so than keeping Rod Streeter and Tyreek Hill and D'Anthony Thomas. Or even keeping Rod Streeter, Tyreek Hill, and Albert Wilson. Rod Streeter brings a veteran presence to this team that is not there anymore, other than Jeremy Maclin, of course, but a veteran presence behind Jeremy Maclin. Side note, quick tangent. I love that in our conversations about Chiefs receivers, we do collectively, as Chiefs fans and analysts and whatever, fanalists, we basically don't talk about Jeremy Maclin anymore, just because he's such a sure thing. He is such a ironclad number one receiver on this team. With just, like, no trust issues. There's nothing like, well, what if Jeremy Maclin steps? Nah. No. He's good. We've got it. Put your faith in him. That's great. I love Jeremy Maclin. But for a veteran presence behind Jeremy Maclin, I digress. I would have rather have seen Rod Streeter there as a guy who can, we saw make some good plays during the preseason, and they had a nice training camp. He can locate the ball, and he gets to it more often than not. We've seen him also, like, produce in the NFL for worse teams than this Chiefs offense. I'm not really sure I understand the logic of trading him here. And really releasing him. I mean, trading him for nothing. I don't really understand the logic of letting him go here, because I think the things he could have brought to this team are unique to Rod Streeter, something that none of these other guys actually bring. One thing that is relevant that Streeter can't provide that everyone else is going to, although maybe Albert Wilson might not, is special teams help. The young guys, all of the young guys, are contributing on special teams, either in coverage or on returns, or in some cases, perhaps both. Rod Streeter is not a special teamer, and maybe that's the tiebreaker. But even then, I don't have any use for Albert Wilson on the special teams units either. And at this point, if you were to ask me, if I was making the cuts on this team, if I was making the calls, I don't think it ever would have come down to Albert Wilson versus Rod Streeter, but if it ever did, I think at this point I would have said, give me Rod Streeter. I don't like what I've seen from Albert Wilson for the last calendar year. And that's too bad, because as a rookie undrafted free agent, he was one of the kind of camp darlings and had a really nice rookie season. But he's fallen off so far. And it seems like a lot of cases, like, fallen off in his effort, which is really unsettling. And if he gets back on track with that, then maybe this all sounds foolish a few weeks from now. But right now, I have major concerns about Albert Wilson, and trading Rod Streeter away for nothing doesn't make me feel any better about them. The Chiefs released safety Jamel Fleming. I'm mentioning this only because I thought the upside of Jamel Fleming, whenever we heard towards the beginning of the offseason that he was going to start working as a safety from corner to safety, I thought there was a spark of a chance that he becomes kind of the next Ron Parker, because as Parker also went from from average corner, Ron Parker as an outside corner, that was a disaster, and so was Jamel Fleming most of the time. A bad outside corner, an okay slot guy, moving back to safety with this exact Chiefs coaching staff, and also similarly built guys with similar tools. I thought maybe Jamel Fleming would be able to kind of step in that Ron Parker role. That obviously didn't happen. But it makes me curious what Ron Parker had in that transition that Jamel Fleming didn't have. Why that transition worked so well for Ron Parker that didn't work for Jamel Fleming. But it didn't happen. So that's fine. The one other note, well, I got actually a few other notes, but one other note on the offensive side of the ball from the skill position guys is that the Chiefs kept James O'Shaughnessy over Brian Parker for the fourth tight end on the team, which is interesting. We saw a lot of those, I talked about last week, I saw a lot of those three tight end kind of cluster setups where the Chiefs had Travis Kelce and Ross Travis and Demetrius Harris, three tight ends who really looked great in the preseason. I'm excited to see how the Chiefs use those three guys on the field at the same time this year. I thought there was a good chance they would keep a fourth tight end because of how much they seem to like that three tight end cluster format, but I thought it would be Brian Parker because he can block. Everybody else is kind of a pass-catching tight end. Certainly James O'Shaughnessy is the draft pick from last year who spent some time not being able to play due to injury and didn't really show a ton this preseason. I liked O'Shaughnessy towards the beginning. Eventually I sort of came to accept the Chiefs were going to go with Parker instead. They didn't. And I'm fine with that. I just think that's worth noting that now the Chiefs have Kelce, Travis, Harris, and O'Shaughnessy. With Harris as the second guy. But Ross Travis is very interesting to me just because I love the converted basketball player to football player thing. I'm a sucker for that storyline, I guess. I still have dreams of Tony Gonzalez and nightmares of Antonio Gates. Maybe that's it. But I think that's worth noting that James O'Shaughnessy makes the team here. Hopefully he continues to develop into another valuable receiving asset and a really, really strong tight end group for the Chiefs. Let's talk quarterbacks. This was kind of a bizarre story to follow. The Chiefs cut Aaron Murray early on, which I've been saying for a long time was how this was going to go. He got claimed. Well, didn't I don't know if he got claimed. He passed through waivers and then signed with the Arizona Cardinals practice squad. So good for him. He's got, you know, a hope for the future still. Happy for Aaron Murray, who's never going to make it here. But then the Chiefs cut Kevin Hogan, and I kept expecting a mystery injury for Hogan. That never happened. So they cut Kevin Hogan, and he cleared waivers. At that point, I was saying, all right, this is fine. They cut Hogan. He'll make it through the waivers. He made it through waivers, and he'll end up in the Chiefs practice squad. This will work out perfectly. Then it comes out that he joins the Browns practice squad. Now, Kevin Hogan has a close relationship with Browns assistant Pep Hamilton from his days at Stanford, and now Pep Hamilton being at in Cleveland. But this is a really confusing move for me. John Dorsey was asked about Kevin Hogan on a conference call, or not, in a press conference on Monday, and he didn't actually ever say, were they trying to keep Kevin Hogan? He said some stuff about how, you know, sometimes you get a player in and you it doesn't work out how you thought it would. They had a chance to get Nick Foles, which obviously makes his quarterback roster better, and I agree with that. And Bray really separated himself in the fourth preseason game. I'm fine with that. But Kevin Hogan was a fifth-round draft pick just a few months ago, and he's gone now. He is of no value to the Kansas City Chiefs anymore. Fifth-round pick a few months ago and then just disappeared. And fifth-round picks are valuable. Well, if you think that trading Marcus Cooper for a seventh-round pick, a conditional seventh-round pick a year from now, is worth literally anything at all, you should be tearing your hair out over losing a fifth-round pick in a draft that we just had. I mean, that's embarrassing. It's embarrassing. And either the Chiefs didn't try to keep Kevin Hogan, which is embarrassing. It means they misevaluated Kevin Hogan. Or they cut him and tried to bring him back, and Kevin Hogan didn't want to return to the Chiefs, preferred to go to Cleveland. Maybe he sees a clearer path to starting in Cleveland. I personally don't. Because if I was a young quarterback in the Kevin Hogan mold, a guy who was, I mean, this is kind of insane. In April, whenever the Chiefs drafted him, people were saying, call him Kevin Daniel. He's going to be the next Chase Daniel. He could be the backup on that team for 10 years. He wasn't the backup on the team ever. He wasn't on the roster for 10 months. So yes, it was, but I don't see a clear path to him starting in Cleveland, or at least having any career in Cleveland, because if I'm in the mold of Kevin Hogan, I want to be with Andy Reid, with Nick Foles, who next year would be paid a bajillion dollars to be on this team, and Alex Smith, who has, what, two more years left, maybe? Maybe three? Probably two? If I'm Kevin Hogan, I want to be in Andy Reid's system for 2 years and be waving my hand around whenever Alex Smith is gone and there's no Nick Foles anymore and Tyler Bray can't complete a check down pass. I want to be Kevin Hogan waving my hand there saying, coach, coach, pick, coach, take me. hey, like Donkey in the Shrek movie, in the first Shrek, where he's bouncing around like, hey, pick me. That's what Kevin Hogan ought to be in this offense. I'm very, so either the Chiefs really misevaluated him or they misevaluated the market for Kevin Hogan. Maybe make the value, well, what if they would have traded that fifth round pick to get Nick Foles as a free agent to help with quarterback depth? That's good. That's fine. We're all totally cool with that. It makes all the sense in the world. But essentially trading up a fifth round pick to bring in Nick Foles for one season, to rent Nick Foles for 1 year, I don't feel so good about that. Before we talk about who the Chiefs added through all of this roster shaking up, I want to talk about some people that this podcast has added that you have volunteered yourself with your money to support this show throughout the season. And I want to just say thank you to everyone who's currently doing that with a couple of new contributors. First of all, this is at patreon.com/RTK. If you like this show and you want to give 5, 10, 20 bucks a month to help support this show, all I can offer right now, I suppose, is to say thank you on this show every week, which I will do with all of the joy in my heart. If you'd like to sponsor this show, you can tweet me at JB Briscoe or check out the Patreon page with some details there for how you can get in touch with me and what that might look like. But for the people that are just volunteering money because they enjoy this show and appreciate it, and it's hopefully entertaining and useful to you on a weekly basis, I want to say thank you very, very much at patreon.com/RTK. $20 group is Don Beal, at Don Beal 32 on Twitter, Andy Simpson, Steven Smith, and then two newbies, Randy Singh, who has contributed in the past, and Ray Hines, at Big Turf Guy on Twitter. He tweeted me and said, 11 a.m., one-year-old girl teething. We're crushing the RTK podcast. She says, Pop, let's join the $20 club. Whatever you want, baby girl. That made me laugh out loud the first time I read it. And Ray's one-year-old girl is already spending his money. Good luck from here on out, Ray. If she can continue, though, spending your money to me, then I'm never going to complain about it. The $10 group, longtime supporters, Tide Declare, at Tide Declare 44, and Christine Roadlander, at C Roadlander on Twitter. The $5 group, headed up by Josh Beadle. Thank you all for supporting the show with your money. If you want to support the show in other ways, you can share the show with your friends. As we come up to the beginning of this season, I expect to see the numbers for this show go back up again, which makes me even more excited to continue making these shows for more and more people. And you can support the show by sharing it, subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts as these shows come out more often. That way you'll never miss an episode. Plus, you can follow me on Twitter at JB Briscoe and send your questions, your ideas, your comments about the show there, or on Facebook at facebook.com/RTK show. As always, thank you for your support. Now let's talk about who the Chiefs have added to their crew. As all of these ads and cuts were going on, the Chiefs claimed an inside linebacker from Green Bay, Sam Barrington, and an offensive tackle from the Cowboys, Brian Witzman. John Dorsey said about Brian Witzman, quote, he's your swing tackle, and he also will be able to develop into a guard. I think he's smart enough to play both guards, both tackles. Good. Great. Versatile offensive lineman. He can play everything except for center. Center is great with Mitch Morse and Zach Fulton. I'm a Ja Reed fan at this point who can play, I think, both guards and both tackles. Which I do think makes this an interesting signing, actually, because Ja Reed's still on the team currently. This is there's an interesting back and forth about Witzman on Twitter between real MN Chiefs fan and Lyle Graverson, a couple of fellow Chiefs fanalists. So Seth, real MN Chiefs fan, said, "So do the Chiefs view Ja Reed as a swing tackle? If so, why bring on another tackle? If not, why pay Reed and not play him at guard?" Lyle responded with, I said, I think they viewed him as the best swing tackle option they had. Maybe this signing changes that and they reconsider him at guard. If you didn't follow that, let me try again, I guess. I thought the Chiefs saw Ja Reed as their swing tackle. And then the question is, if they don't, why wouldn't they play him at guard since they're paying him anyway? If they do view him as that swing tackle, why would they bring in this new guy? Well, perhaps what Lyle suggests, perhaps they were saying that he's the swing guard until they get a better option, which now they have. So maybe now, perhaps, we see Ja Reed get to play some guard if Parker Anger continues to struggle in the regular season at any given point. That gives you... Andy Reid always keeps 8 or 9 offensive linemen. I was hoping they'd be able to squeeze through with 7 with Reed and Fulton because they're so versatile. But now they have a very versatile 8 with Witzman, Fulton, and Reed behind their starting 5. not only I feel really good about this Chiefs offensive line, the best I felt in a long time. Not only because Eric Fisher's locked down for a long time, Mitchell Schwartz is locked down for a long time, Mitch Morse is going to be the center for a long time. LDT has developed nicely, and hopefully continues to in the regular season, even though I was down on him. And Parker Anger is a young guy with some upside, although I would rather see Ja Reed be playing that guard spot right now. The offensive line, though, I think is in good shape. I feel good about that. Let's talk about Sam Barrington, the inside linebacker. This makes sense at first glance because the Chiefs just lost Josh Malgo for the season. Another thing, though, and a reason that he ended up getting the spot over Ramiq Wilson, who the Chiefs ended up releasing to bring in Barrington, what Barrington can do that Ramiq Wilson hasn't been able to do is play special teams. This is a Dave Taub move. They're saying, listen, we need linebacker depth, but that guy who is behind Justin March, which he currently is, which I'll talk about in a second, whoever's behind Justin March has got to be able to also help on special teams. A 53-man roster starts to get smaller and smaller whenever you account for 11 starters on offense, 11 starters on defense, your key backups, and then you've got to fill up both sides of your special teams unit with the rest of those guys. The versatility there is key, especially whenever you've got to get Dave Taub, a guy who is one of the best, maybe the best special teams coach in football. You want to give him the tools he needs to pull off what you brought him on to do, which is to either stop big plays or make big defensive plays or to create big plays on the offensive side of special teams. So this move makes plenty of sense to me. I haven't been all that particularly high on Ramiq Wilson, but I am particularly high on Justin March. I'm optimistic about him. He did an interview during the fourth preseason game. It sounds like he spent last year, as he was rehabbing his injury, focusing on the film room and learning about NFL offenses, which is a huge key for an NFL inside linebacker. I mean, look at if you consider how good Derek Johnson is. He's had all the physical tools for years now. But even now, as his physical tools are, I'm sure he would admit, going down. Like he's on the downward slope of his career. The way you extend your career as an inside linebacker is by being the smartest guy on the field. And Derek Johnson has consistently been a very smart inside linebacker. That's why he makes, and not just like knowing what's going on, but being able to recognize reflexively what's going on with an offense. That's how he ends up in the backfield so often. He's not any faster than D Ford. He's certainly slower than D Ford. Obviously different positions, but just as an example. But he knows where he needs to be because he is so good at recognizing what's going on in opposing offenses. If Justin March can be able to even slide in that direction a centimeter a second, he's going to be a really, really interesting growing prospect for this team. And not just a prospect like a guy like I'll talk about later, Daddy Nicholas, but a guy who could really become a legitimate part of this team. Ray Hines, mentioned earlier, at Big Turf Guy on Twitter, said March is probably the top guy I've been excited about making this team. If Dottie can, it's Daddy. I have a hard time, I need to take another tangent. I have a hard time calling him Daddy Nicholas, because it's spelt like Dottie, D-A-D-I, and calling another man Daddy makes me uncomfortable. I feel better after admitting that, though. We're going to work on this. Ray said, if Daddy can put on 20 pounds of rock, he might take the top spot of guys he's most excited about. And I'm going to need a minute. I'm excited and glad that the top two guys, two of the most exciting young guys, being Nicholas and Justin March, are two guys at two positions of need for this team, at inside and outside linebacker. The Chiefs need young pass rushers. They need young guys to stack up beside Derek Johnson and eventually take over for Derek Johnson. So the fact that those guys are there makes me very excited about where this is going for this team. Will O'Hara tweeted at me. He said, March is seriously the nicest guy ever, too. I was in a group project with him at Akron. He could not have been nicer to everyone. I am a sucker for those anecdotal stories. Oh, I had a class with him. I had a group project with him one time. He was a super nice guy. That just makes me happy. I hope that makes you happy. But whatever. Now though, Justin March, this, I can't. I'm having a hard time pulling myself together because of Daddy Nicholas. Now Justin March is set to start beside Derek Johnson in week one and beyond, which is not half bad for an undrafted free agent who lost his entire rookie season to a torn meniscus. Just this year, he got the starting spot over DJ Alexander and got that roster spot over Ramiq Wilson. That's a really nice career progression for a guy that last year was an undrafted free agent who never played because he was hurt. Isaiah on Twitter, left bench leader, said, how many tackles would you project for Justin March over 16 games starting this season? Well, looking at last year, Josh Malga in 14 starts last year had 45 tackles. In 16 starts in 2014 without Derek Johnson had 82 tackles. And so if March were to be healthy and to start all 16 games, which I'm not totally sure about, but if he were to do all that, I could see him racking up 50 to 60 tackles with a few rookie mistakes that could cost the team here and there. That's the learning curve I would expect. The thing that could really derail is if he has a lot of those mistakes early on, and then eventually the Chiefs end up going to Barrington beside Derek Johnson for a little while with a guy with more experience. But I hope we don't ever see that, because I think Justin March's ceiling is awfully high. I'm vowing to only say this once this season, but let's talk about that practice squad, huh? Linebacker Amik Wilson's a name that you know very well. He's been on the Chiefs for a little bit now. He's on the practice squad after the Chiefs cut him for Barrington, who we talked about earlier. New addition, cornerback Julian Wilson. Guard, you know, also have heard pretty frequently, I think, Jordan Devy, commonly mocked to the practice squad guy. Cornerback Terrence Mitchell. Wide receiver Frankie Hammond. Wide receiver Shontavious Jones. Defensive lineman David King. Guard Gerard Pugsley. Running back Darren Reeves. And linebacker Terrence Smith. The only guys here on this list that I really expect to see something out of on this Chiefs team, like, ever, is David King and Darren Reeves. Both of those guys can absolutely play. I think they could play on an NFL roster right now. It surprises me that both of those guys made it through the waiver system and got to the practice squad. The rest of those guys, the practice squad's going to keep having significant turnover as guys are cut and moved. And plus, as I mentioned earlier, the Chiefs have to release someone from their active roster whenever Barry gets reactivated. So one of these guys will probably be off of this practice squad very soon. I think it's a somewhat overrated discussion topic right now. It is nice to be able to expand your roster by a handful of players when you're limited to just 53. And whenever somebody gets hurt, if Spencer Ware gets hurt, I feel great about Darren Reeves' ability to step in. If one of the defensive linemen go down, David King can come up and make some plays on the NFL level. If the Chiefs have significant issues on the offensive line, Gerard Pugsley has been on the active roster for a little bit. He can play a little bit. But other than that, it's going to be hard to actually see where any of those guys truly end up. Let's hop over really quickly now to the fourth preseason game. I'm not going to do the play-by-play thing, though I did actually write some notes for it that I have since completely deleted because they're useless. But I do want to talk about some good and some bad from this game, from some specific players. The first person on the good list is Daddy Nicholas. He could be a guy, in fact, I think he will be a guy, who is projected to do something as he develops. He's a guy that has some raw skills, frankly, has some raw skills that Dee Ford has. Some raw skills that we could look at and say, this guy, he could have a future doing this. He's got a quickness, he's got a hip flexibility that Dee Ford has never had. Nicholas can get off the line quickly, but then he bends better than a lot of NFL linebackers. He bends better than Dee Ford, certainly, just as an on-team comparison. And if he can continue to beef up a little bit, this is a guy who is so technically gifted that he played at Virginia Tech. He was playing as far into the middle of the defensive line as the three technique. He was playing essentially a defensive tackle. I think I've said in the past, he's 235 pounds or something like that. I think he's 30 pounds lighter than Justin Houston. So if he can beef up about 20 pounds, he could be a really valuable force on the edge for the Chiefs going forward. During this season, I don't expect to see him consistently, but if he started to get some playing time and obvious passing downs, that would make all the sense in the world to me, because he can get to the quarterback. So he showed some flashes of that in this game. He showed that throughout the preseason. Keep an eye on Daddy Nicholas. Another nice performance here was Tyler Bray. After starting 1-7, he went 9-10 from there on out. He went 5-5 on a touchdown drive. Struggled. He bounced back. That's one reason that he ended up locking in that third quarterback spot over Aaron Murray, over Kevin Hogan. He has crazy arm talent. He has some really incredible ability. He had one pass in the game that was... He tossed a bomb off of his back foot. Something that, you know, if and this is not a knock. I love Alex Smith. You know that. You listen to the show. You get this. But if Alex Smith was going to throw a ball 40 yards, he would have to get a running start and then plant his feet and then shot put it like he was in the Olympics, and then still like try to will it with some sort of dark magic to get those 40 yards. It's just, that's not in Alex Smith's skill set. Now, Tyler Bray's skill set seems to be missing like the mental aspect of being a quarterback and the ability to throw a short pass without sailing it over someone's head. Tyler Bray, his game has significant deficiencies. But man, the highlights from Tyler Bray are so intriguing. So I totally understand why the Chiefs are also enamored with him. I am too. DeAnthony Thomas, as we talked about earlier, who ended up making the team after this game, looked more like a wide receiver than I've ever seen from him before. He was locating passes and going up and getting them. I haven't seen him do that ever with the Chiefs. Adam Tyser wrote about, as I mentioned earlier, wrote about DeAnthony Thomas and how the Chiefs' offense is different with him on the field. I'm going to just read a section from his article on ESPN.com. Tyser wrote, quote, "The Chiefs have been better offensively with Thomas on the field than without. In 2014, Thomas's rookie season, the Chiefs averaged 6.5 yards per play when he was on the field, regardless of whether he got the ball or not. They averaged 5.0 yards per play when he wasn't. They averaged 6.4 yards per rushing attempt when he was in the game, 4.1 when he wasn't. The difference in yards per play with or without Thomas was slight last season. 5.7 yards with, 5.5 yards without. But the Chiefs still ran the ball much better when he was in their lineup, 5.9 yards per attempt than when he wasn't, 4.6. That is not an unreasonably important chunk of yardage. And I would say, well, that's a pretty small sample size, but it's not necessarily. Here's the reason why I think the Chiefs kept him, and more simplistically. He is still a matchup problem. And maybe Tyreek Hill is a scarier matchup problem for defenses. But imagine, just for a moment, what this offense looks like if you've got Jeremy Maclin and Chris Conley. And then also on the field is DeAnthony Thomas and Tyreek Hill and Jamaal Charles. There's not a defense on the planet fast enough for that. What if you want to make it? What if you want to take it to a different level? Make it Maclin and Conley and Hill and DeAnthony Thomas and put Spencer Ware in the backfield. Spread all those guys out. You're going to see if you're going to have matchup problems. You probably are, because there's no linebackers in football can cover Tyreek Hill and DeAnthony Thomas. But for Tyreek Hill especially, most corners aren't big enough, aren't strong enough, aren't quick enough. And then you have the potential to either have a finesse back in the backfield with Charles or with Tre'Kendrick West. Or if you want to make it Spencer Ware's backfield, you can run right over somebody. If they try to put in a faster, quicker group of linebackers, and then Spencer Ware's there to run them over, it's going to be pretty good for your offense. So you can argue that this Chiefs team can do that with or without DeAnthony Thomas, but I will argue that DeAnthony Thomas is a perpetually difficult matchup for defenses to deal with. And with his issues from the second half of last season, be it concussion issues or other things we never found out about, DeAnthony Thomas does have a role on this team to play. I thought that Tyreek Hill was going to be brought in to make DeAnthony Thomas irrelevant, but when you consider that the NFL is so important to have consistent matchup problems. That's why Tyreek Hill and Ross Travis are so exciting. I'm sorry, that's why Travis Kelce and Ross Travis are so exciting. As tight ends who can change how you have to cover tight ends. It's why Tyreek Hill and DeAnthony Thomas are so exciting. Fast slot guys that change how you cover slot guys. It's why Chris Conley is exciting. He's a giant man who's very fast. The NFL offenses are built on matchup problems. DeAnthony Thomas still is one. Another highlight from this game was Kavari Russell. He knocked a pass away on fourth down, literally maybe the first time I've heard his name this preseason on the TV broadcast. It was a great play. I'd love to see more of him. And I've perpetually this preseason questioned why we don't see more of him. Well, Therese Paylor on KansasCity.com for the Kansas City Star wrote an article that actually begins to answer that question of why have we not seen more Kavari Russell. He wrote that Russell's struggled to pick up the Chiefs' defensive terminology, which, according to Paylor, says, quote, most of which he heard and used at Notre Dame, but directly conflicts with what it meant in college. So Kavari Russell is, like, completely reorienting what exactly all of these things mean in this defense in his mind. A guy like DJ White getting a start over him in preseason has got to be a little bit concerning, got to be a little bit of a wake-up call. But, That there's your reason, at least. There's your reason for where Kavari Russell is. I still think he's crazy talented. I would love to see him get some time in this season. And maybe if the terminology thing clicks partway through the season, we see him take over that number two spot if a guy like Phillip Gaines is struggling. So something else to keep an eye on there. One last bright spot from the preseason game was DeMarcus Robinson, the young receiver from Florida. He had a really, like a legitimate handful of very nice special teams plays. He's not getting hardly any consideration at wide receiver yet, but if he can hold on to his job through special teams, he'll get time to develop into the offense. And I think that could be something that actually gives him time to become a good NFL receiver. But so far, nothing from him receiving-wise, but his special teams play has been terrific. Last actual good note here, the defensive line depth. Nick Williams and David King. The King now is on the practice squad. Williams is on the active roster. This is a very, very deep defensive line that the Chiefs have. We've known that for weeks now. A couple of negatives. Kevin Acker, who the Chiefs traded for, had one good play defending deep but got burnt a couple of times. That concerns me deeply. Tyreek Hill couldn't catch anything. He had a play where he went up and got a ball, hit him in both of his hands, and he just dropped it. A bad game. And really, honestly, a pretty lame preseason for Tyreek Hill as a wide receiver, at least. And Aaron Murray really struggled, obviously no longer on the team. Now on the Cardinals practice squad. I'm going to wrap up today's show with an interesting idea and suggestion from Ty DeClaire, a frequent contributor to the show and Patreon supporter, patreon.com/RTK. I'm telling you, man, that's where it's at. He said first, he said, if Charles and Ware are the 1-2, I'd love to see Wes return a few kicks and get some use out of him earlier in the year. I like that if they're both healthy early in the year. But as long as Nile Davis is on this roster, that's not going to happen. So the Nile Davis confusion continues for me. But I want to talk about some other things with the backfield that Ty was suggesting. He said, entertain me for a second. Ware and Wes are the best backups in the league. Now imagine an offense with Charles in the slot. Less wear and tear on his knees, higher chance to stay healthy and get him in space more often. Will probably make defenses bring in an extra guy and bring more chances for the run game. Charles is a Hall of Fame talent running back, and taking him away from what he does best is dumb. But maybe 10 to 12 snaps a game is a different look could throw off the other team to turn into an extra 7 to 10 points. So let's talk about the idea of playing Jamaal Charles in the slot here. I think this is interesting, and I kind of like the idea of Charles in the slot. Most likely, I could see a situation where he and Ware line up in the backfield together, and then Charles goes into motion into the slot, because then, in all likelihood, a linebacker follows him out there, and you have an immediate matchup problem, which is what I just was talking about with DeAnthony Thomas and Tyreek Hill and these tight ends. It's all about matchup problems. If you're an offense, your entire goal is to find those, to create matchup problems, and then the quarterback has to exploit them. Alex Smith is smart and good enough to find them and exploit them. So with that in mind, I like this. Plus, if they don't put Charles in motion, then you just have two dangerous running backs to take the ball out of the backfield, or you could send Charles out and still just hand it off to Ware, who would then have plenty of space to get a nice chunk of yardage on the ground. Because one of those linebackers is following Charles, or someone else in the secondary is coming up to cover Charles in the slot. Maybe the defense is prepared for that, so the safety has to come up and man up on Charles, and then all of a sudden, Chris Conley on the other side of the field is looking at a slant route that could open him into a lot of space. Smith sees that, changes Conley's route, and you're in business. So I like this idea of finding unique ways to use all of the talent the Chiefs have in the backfield to create more and more matchup problems. Charles can do it. I think in a lot of cases, Charkendrick West can do it. I do have concerns about Charles now not only getting healthy, which is new, but also staying healthy. If he can get a few less touches on the ground and have those converted to some snaps out in the slot, I'm totally on board with that. I have no problem with that whatsoever. So I'm into the idea of taking all of that talent, because even with Darren Reeves on the practice squad, not counting him, Nile Davis does some things well. Jamaal Charles does everything well. Charkendrick West does some Jamaal Charles things well. Spencer Ware does a lot of things very well. Tyreek Hill and DeAnthony Thomas do unique things very well. There's a lot of explosiveness without even talking about the four tight ends that can be dangerous. The 2 to 3 receivers that I actually believe in. There are just a lot of weapons on this offense, and it's confusing, and it's going to be confusing. Well, I'm about to go into a Donald Trump thing real quick. It's going to be confusing for the mainstream media. For that mainstream media out there to know what's going on. It's going to be confusing, I think, for ESPN sometimes whenever you're talking nationally about why the Chiefs are producing so well offensively whenever that begins to happen. It's going to be hard for them to say, well, they've got Jeremy Maclin and Chris Conley. And Chris Conley is probably going to get too much credit this year, because even if he does get the ball, a lot of cases it's going to be because defenses have to respect that backfield. They have to respect all of those tight ends. Obviously, they have to respect Jeremy Maclin. Chris Conley ends up being the weakest link of this offense, so maybe he gets some one-on-one matchups, which he can then exploit. So, for all of the concerns that I do have about the defense right now, and there are plenty, and in fact, I'm certainly more concerned about the defense than the offense right now, with no Josh Malga, with no Justin Houston for a long time, with no trustworthy second corner, with Eric Berry, who wasn't in camp or anything, which doesn't concern me too much, but that's a slight concern. I have a nice handful of concerns. The run defense looked bad. A nice handful of concerns about the defense, but the offense is embarrassingly dangerous. So this is going to be a huge year for Andy Reid in this offense, because if he can actually be what we think Andy Reid is supposed to be, and can take all of these players and use them as tools to make this offense truly dangerous, then this entire team is going to be looking at a really, really nice season. That's going to do it for this episode of the Roughing the Kicker Chiefs podcast on Blog Talk Radio and on ArrowheadAddict.com. As always, if you want to get a hold of me on Twitter at JBBriscoe, Facebook.com/RTK Show, hit up the comments in the Arrowhead Addict post, which I sometimes do a bad job of remembering to check, but I will continue to work on that during this season. If you want to support the show, you can do it at patreon.com/RTK, or just share the show with your friends. Follow me on Twitter, whatever it is that you need to do to help more people hear this show. I am so excited to finally be getting into the regular season, and you will hear from me very soon. I cannot tell you strongly enough, whatever you use to subscribe to podcasts, subscribe to this show if you haven't already, because shows are going to start coming fast and furious. I'm going to be the Vin Diesel of podcasts, because there'll be another show before the Chargers game, then one after, then one before the next game, and it's going to be a cycle that's going to carry us all the way to the Super Bowl, or at least until a heartbreaking wildcard game loss. Thanks for listening. Bye, Mom!